Here's a CattleCast Rewind.
Here today talking with Kevlin B. Jones, who plays Fletcher in The Bodyguard here at Wharton Center. And this young Flint native began his journey after being awarded the Best Overall Child Singer at the 2016 AMTC Shine Conference. Hi, Kevlin.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. So I heard last night that you brought the house down with the song Dance With Somebody. And obviously lots of great music in The Bodyguard.
Yes.
Could you give us, not the whole song, but maybe a 10-second version of that song?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, I want to dance with somebody. I want to feel the heat with somebody. Yeah, I want to dance with somebody. With somebody who loves me.
Hi, this is Tobin Book, author of Wicked Women of Detroit, and you're listening to CattleCast.
Welcome to another episode of CattleCast, presented by Capital Area District Libraries. It's the podcast that provides a nice mix of information and entertainment.
Thanks for joining us for the CattleCast podcast. I'm Mark Bazita, library assistant for the Downtown Lansing branch of Capital Area District Libraries. Congratulations to Emily Flanner, who knew that indie was the keyword from our last episode, so she will receive a Kindle Fire. This episode features interviews with music icon Olita Adams, author Joe Grimm, and Cattle Downtown Lansing head librarian Michelle Brousseau, who will provide this month's cattle keyword. Olita Adams is next. You're listening to CattleCast.
It's an exciting time for Capital Area District Libraries. They're celebrating 20 years of service in Ingham County. I'm here with Human Resources Director Julie Laxton talking about how Cattle is giving back to the community.
That's right, Stephanie. Through an initiative called Cattle Cares, our libraries have collected backpacks and toys for kids in need, personal hygiene products for women in shelters and homeless veterans, and signed up people for the Michigan-Oregon Donor Registry.
That's great to hear, Julie. Cattle really does care about making a difference in our community. What other things are you doing?
Cattle staff raises money for the Capital Area Literacy Coalition through the Casual for a Cause initiative and participates in community events like Recycle-Rama and Capital City River Run.
So how can our listeners find out more about Cattle Cares as well as employment opportunities?
Just visit our website at cattle.org or any cattle location.
All right, sounds good. That's Julie Laxton, Human Resources Director from Capital Area District Libraries. They are celebrating 20 years of service in Ingham County.
I don't care how you get here. Just get here.
I'm sure you recognize that song from my next guest, who in 1990 released her debut album, Circle of One, which included the hit single, Get Here. She has performed with many iconic artists, including Tears for Fears, Phil Collins, and Luther Vandross. This four-time Grammy nominee has also released 9 albums, including her most recent project, Third Set. Olita Adams, welcome to CattleCast.
Thank you so much. It's great getting a chance to be with you this morning.
Now, I understand you recently performed in Germany. How was that experience?
I'll tell you, one of the best audiences I've ever had. It was overwhelming. It was fantastic. It was. We have quite a fan base in Germany, all over Germany, actually. But I hadn't been there in a while, so in a few years. So it was great that the people were still very, very supportive, and we got a chance to perform with the Bremen Philharmonic.
Oh, wow.
And I also took my band over, so we all performed together, and it was just fantastic. We spent a good 6 months or so. I communicated online with the conductor who helped me with the arrangements, making sure that my arrangements worked for his orchestra and that all of that worked with my voice. And it turned out just beautifully. We had like I'm sure it was more than 2 hours that we were on that stage. It was fantastic.
Who are some of your musical influences?
Being raised in a very religious home, my first influences were those of gospel singers, people like Reverend James Cleveland and Shirley Caesar and Albertina Walker and the Caravan Singers and all of that. And then, of course, when Aretha Franklin started doing her thing, then of course she was definitely one of my all-time favorites. And I used the excuse to my great uncle and dad, as I called him, saying she was a preacher's kid too. So so I learned a lot about playing piano and singing from her, and singing from the bottom of my heart. But then in school, when you know, being trained classically, and then listening to Roberta Flack and Donny Hathaway, who sort of incorporated a more trained, a more disciplined sound, along with infusing jazz and blues and gospel and everything else in it, then I learned a more refined way of performing, and I loved it. So those were my greatest influences.
Now, your big break came in 1985. Tell us how that happened.
I was performing in Kansas City at the Hyatt Hotel, and a group by the name of Tears for Fears, a British pop group, were staying at the hotel. They were, in fact, in town on tour, traveling around the States. They had quite a following, so had sold at least 9.5 million records of the previous album, and they were staying in that hotel, so they came down to the club after their show. You know, they came back to the hotel, changed clothes, came down to the club to relax, and I was singing with my trio, and they were very much taken by what I did. But I did not meet them that night. So 2 years later, they hunted me down and and called me up and asked me to be a part of their Seeds of Love album. And not only that, but they flew back to America to talk to me about it, and stayed for about 3 days. We spent 3 days just getting to know one another. And that next year, in 88, I recorded with them for their Seeds of Love album, and I ended up getting a record deal because of the work that I did for them.
Wow. So Get Here is by far your biggest hit. What drew you to that song?
When I left the recording sessions from Tears for Fears, because we recorded it in London, in Shepherd's Bush, actually, in for a whole month, and then I had already been scheduled to do a piano bar tour of Scandinavia, stopping at, you know, different locations around all of Scandinavia. And they called me back, and it was actually a wonderful, you know, opportunity to be able to do that. And they were really enjoying the talent, and I thought, wow, this is a great opportunity for me, and that's how I kept, you know, was able to keep going.
And what is it about that song that has allowed it to endure for so many years?
Well, the I heard the song actually as I was on that piano bar trip and in a dress store, and actually my boyfriend at the time, and he's now my husband, he sent it to me, and I learned the song and started singing it over and over when I got back to the States, and it became so very much a part of me. And I had already been singing the song, which was written by Brenda Russell. And by that time, we used to sometimes sing it at the beginning of the set, but then it ended up being the last song at night, and we'd play it for maybe 20 minutes, you know. I called it Variations in the Key of B Flat. I just grew to love the song so very much. So when I got that break and that deal to record, Roland asked me, who was one of the members of Tears for Fears, and he produced my first record. And he said, you know, what would you like to sing? And I said, I feel really good about Get Here. And it was so much fun. I ended up going on tour with them as well. And in the sound checks, when we would arrive at certain places, the whole crew would always ask me to sing that song while I was sound checking. And I think we sort of got the feeling at that point that that was going to be a very special song.
Absolutely. Well, over your career, has there been a song that you wished you had recorded but didn't?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I'm sure there are many. I think that Mariah Carey sang a song that used to be a very big hit, I Can't Live As Living Is Without You. I used to love that song. And, well, there's so many, and probably anything that Sting has recorded. Uh-huh. I think he has the best career of anybody that's recording, and because he does what he wants to do, and it is timeless and will hold up forever.
Right.
I really, really admire his career and the music that he does.
Tell us about your most recent album, Third Set.
Third Set came about because we were trying to, I have a bad habit of waiting many years between records, because I think you should record if you really have something to say. I needed another recording, so we tried putting together some, live recordings from our various dates, but there was always something wrong. The equipment didn't act right or whatever, and so, or there would be buzzes or noises from the venue where we were. And so I said, well, if we're going to do this, then let's just go into the studio, play it down. And so we did this record in 2.5 days, and there were some songs that the audience seemed to really be enjoying in our live venues. And I love this band that I'm working with. I'm working with John Pena on bass and James Hara on guitar. My husband plays drums, and I'm on keys. And it was just such a good feeling. And in the studio, it was like breathing as one. And I had such a fun experience. Everything came together in a very short period of time.
What current artist reminds you a little bit of yourself?
Ooh, these are wonderful questions. That's really hard for me to say, and I know that there are many out there who do that sort of thing, and I'm going to probably later on go, oh, I should have said. My style is actually more closely associated with, I think, the artists of yesterday, like Roberta Flack, because of the way that I sing. And I thought that Norah Jones, I was so happy that she became such a success, because during my time coming up, if a woman played piano, they weren't always taken that seriously when they were singing. They wanted them to stand up and look cute and not sit down and play the piano, or else they would be considered jazz. So there aren't that many not that many voices that are low. That's another thing that's very different about my voice, is that I have a very low voice compared to a lot of the female singers. Well, as far as that's concerned, there was a time where it was a low voice even for male singers. So I'll have to give that one more thought.
Well, and I'm sure there are many artists out there up and coming who are following you and enjoying your work over the years and following your career. And you may be inspiring them, whether you know it or not. So,
no, I hope so.
Well, the new album is called Third Set. It's available for purchase at OlitaAdams.com and on Amazon.com. Of course, Olita's music is also available through our branches and the Cattle app. Olita Adams, it's been a real honor. Thank you for spending time with us today.
Oh, I thank you so very much. I wish you all the best.
And you're listening to the Cattle Cast Podcast.
Tell
Our next guest is Joe Grimm, a Michigan State University journalism professor and veteran of the Detroit Free Press. He's also written and co-written nonfiction, including Coney Island and Windjammers, Songs of the Great Lakes Sailors. His latest work, The Faygo Book, tells the story of Detroit's beloved soda pop and how it has remained the last bottler standing in Pop Alley, thanks to its pioneering techniques, rambunctious rainbow of flavors, and a fiercely loyal community. Joe, welcome to Cattlecast.
Thank you, Mark.
So what made you want to write the Faygo book?
I think it was the Coney book. It made me incredibly thirsty. I've been a lifelong Detroiter, and I love so many things about Detroit and Michigan. Seeing how much people love the Coney book, how good it made them feel about Detroit, I wanted to do something similar. I was surprised that no one had yet done a Faygo book, so I began talking about that.
Faygo's been around forever, it feels like, and through recessions and the Great Depression, wartime, and more, Faygo prospered. What do you attribute the company's success to?
Well, the Faygo book explains that the company started in 1907 in the middle of a global recession, near the beginning of it, and they made it through that time. Faygo faced a lot of other challenges. Some of the big ones were sugar rationing, World War I, World War II, diet fads and crazes that made them go with less sugar, and then artificial sweeteners that nobody wanted around anymore. The bottle bill in Michigan was a huge challenge for them, but I think the thing that made Faygo survive was in the early years, they were in a city that was rapidly growing in population that carried them along through those early startup years, and they were just very innovative with their own chemists and engineers in the factory so they could adjust their flavors on the fly and get them out to the stores right away. And the other thing was Faygo was never a one-flavor pop. Mm-hmm. It's always, from its beginning, offered a multiple of flavors, and so they found some that stuck and some that disappeared.
Well, how do you think Detroit has shaped Faygo, and in turn, how has Faygo shaped Detroit?
Well, they've had a very close connection, and I think that created some of this loyalty that you see. Faygo started on the Near East Side of Detroit in the Jewish enclave near where Black Bottom and Paradise Valley were later created because African Americans were prevented by deed restrictions from living anywhere else. And Faygo, to this day, still is within a few thousand feet of where it started. It's moved factories a couple times, but it has never left the neighborhood, and the neighborhood never left Faygo. And I think people appreciate the loyalty of Faygo, not just as workers, but also as Faygo lovers. And we have seen Werner's go away, Vlasic Pickles go away, Hudson's go away, the Pistons left, the Lions left. Everybody seemed to be going, but Faygo kept on making pop.
What is the most interesting thing you learned when writing the Faygo book?
Gosh, there were so many. And there are so many great stories in the Faygo book. They come from Susie Fagenson, who was granddaughter of one of the founders. Some of them were big things and some of them were small things. One of the things that I thought was fascinating was that before there was a Kermit the Frog, puppeteer Jim Henson was making Faygo commercials with puppets that sort of evolved into what Kermit became.
Is that right?
I thought that was something I had certainly never heard of before.
Right. Oh, that's very interesting. When you're doing your research, do you find that there are still so many people who have a Faygo story or Faygo memory, or do you encounter people who have never heard of it before?
Great question, Mark. I've been going out to libraries and talking about the Faygo book, and every night in the library, it ends with people coming forward and saying, I used to be a jumper for Faygo, jumping off the trucks to take the pop into the stores. I grew up with Faygo. One woman said she had a friend who had five or six kids, and every Sunday after church, they would come home from church, and at lunchtime, the mom would just tear open a bag of potato chips on the kitchen table, put out glasses of rock and rye, and leave the room. And that was lunch. So every time I go someplace, I meet somebody with a story. In fact, last night, I met a woman who was a great-granddaughter of one of the founders. I did not know about her.
As you're writing this, what works of nonfiction have influenced you as a writer?
Well, I love to read different kinds of stuff. As a newspaper editor, of course, I'm reading news all the time and editing it a lot. And editing will teach you a lot about writing. I did learn that the best way to become a better writer is to read fiction and nonfiction and some books on craft. I like nonfiction. I'm more comfortable in nonfiction. I I'm intimidated by the thought of writing a piece of fiction. I do like to read fiction, but for nonfiction, I love to read Michigan and Great Lakes history. I really got a lot out of the huge biography of John Adams and how that story could be told essentially from letters and notes. I felt as though he'd been interviewed for the book. But of course, that was impossible. And for the Faygo book, I tried to use a lot of material from news accounts. I didn't have anything from the Faygo Company or personal notes, very few of those. But I did read a lot of contemporary accounts and try to put those together into what became a pretty interesting story.
And before we started here, we were talking about the old Faygo commercials.
Oh, yes.
Right? Who are some of the people who did some of those?
Well, this was probably influential. I grew up in the 60s when Faygo was killing it with animated commercials and then celebrity commercials. The earliest stars in Faygo's TV commercials were Herkimer Bottleneck, who became too pooped to participate and had to have a slug of Uptown so that he could be up, up, up with Uptown. Another famous early person, of course, was the Faygo Kid. Which way did he go? Which way did he go? He went for Faygo! And, of course, he threw Black Bart into jail for trying to steal the old-fashioned root beer. And then we had celebrities like the Great Gildersleeve, who transitioned from radio to TV. There's a picture of him in the book, as well as pictures of Soupy Sales. W.C. Fields, who was a voice impersonator, represented him. And the same with Laurel and Hardy. We had Alex Karras in commercials for Red Pop. We had Tommy Hitman Hearns, the Motor City Hitman. Man in there pushing punch. When Faygo got the idea it could become a national brand, it started to spend money on celebrity commercials. Joan Rivers was another one. Not inexpensive to run these national ads. Eventually, Faygo had to decide between being loyal to that East Side neighborhood and reaching its destiny of becoming a national soda pop company, which might have taken it right out of Detroit. And of course, we know that Faygo is still in Detroit. And the book explains the kind of unusual thing that happened that made Faygo decide it was going to stick with Detroit and Michigan.
All right, last question here. What are your favorite and least favorite Faygo flavors and why?
Well, I have a number of favorites. I'd say my favorite is Rock and Rye. I had one last night. I have a Diet Rock and Rye, which is pretty good, in the refrigerator at home. Red Pop is right up there. That's a very popular flavor. We just had a Sweet 16 where we asked people on Facebook to pick among 16 flavors, and we bracketed them, and it came down to a showdown between Rock and Rye and Red Pop, and Rock and Rye won. Faygo has won awards for its orange and for its root beer. I like grape. I kind of could go on, I guess. The flavor I've had that I didn't really care for that much was probably cotton candy. Although one person told me that she likes cotton candy because it doesn't get all over your face like the real thing. And I talked to a person yesterday who said, I love cotton candy and candy apple, which came out about the same time.
Remember Frosh? That was the one I...
Frosh? That's Frosh. What they used W.C. Fields' voice for, because they were trying to pitch to adults, and they thought W.C. Fields is a great pitch man for adults, and he said that any pop that's not good for children can't be all bad.
Joe, this has really been interesting, and I can't wait to read the book myself. The Faygo book is available now. It will be available at Cattle Branches. You can visit cattle.org to get your copy. Joe, thanks so much for joining us on CattleCast.
Thank you, Mark. This was fun.
Everybody ready?
Comic books and rubber hats, climbing to the tree.
Enjoying this podcast? Also check out the Executive Edition and Reader's Roundtable podcasts, available through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and the Cattle App.
The Christmas holiday season is just around the corner, but for my next guest, Christmas is year-round. Joining me now on the CattleCast is Carla Bronner-Spletzer. She is the Vice President of Bronner's Christmas Wonderland in Frankenmuth, Michigan. Carla, welcome to CattleCast.
Thank you. So nice to be chatting with you.
So Bronner's Wonderland in Frankenmuth is known as the world's largest Christmas store, but I know it didn't start out that way. Can you give us a brief history of the store and how it evolved into what it is today?
Sure. It actually started out as a small sign painting business by my dad, Wally Bronner, And he was artistic, had artistic flair. And so when he was in high school, he would paint signs for local businesses around here and farmers and different things like that, and do window displays for some of the stores here. And then one year he was decorating in Bay City, Michigan, in a store called Jennison Hardware, and he was doing a display window there. And some people from the city of Clare, Michigan, came into the store in Bay City, and they were talking to the people at Jennison Hardware and said, well, we'd like to buy some decorations like you have in your window. And they said, well, we don't sell decorations. Go talk to the guy trimming the window. So they talked to my dad, and they wanted to have some decorations to put on their city lamppost for the city of Clare, Michigan. And that time, there were no, like, commercial Christmas decorations mass-produced, you know, that you now see hanging from many of the street posts in the cities. So he had some wood panels that they painted Christmas scenes on, and then they hung those wood panels on their street posts in Clare, Michigan. And so that went over well, and some other cities wanted to order that type of decoration, so he sold to some other cities. And then when the committees would get together from these cities to try and figure out what they wanted for their city decorations, then you know, some of the wives would come along, well, don't you have any Christmas decorations for the home? And so that's how it actually got into the home decorations. So it actually, through the years, evolved from a small sign painting business into the world's largest Christmas store. My dad could have never imagined that, you know, back when he started painting signs.
Right. Well, I know more than 2 million people visit Bronner's every year. What are some of the reactions that you've heard or seen from people coming through the doors for the first time?
Probably the initial reaction is like a wow, or, you know, this is amazing. They just kind of come in and you just kind of see, you know, their eyes get bigger and they're just kind of wow. And they're surprised how large the store is. A lot of people, you know, like this is their happy place to come and just have a good feeling. Many people have a tradition where they come each year or a few times throughout the year, and they meet their family and friends here to enjoy time together. And also a lot of people mention that they really appreciate that we keep Christ in Christmas.
Now, it's hard to imagine any Christmas ornament or decoration that you don't have. How are items selected for Bronner's?
We have a team of buyers, and they attend various trade shows. So, you know, they select the items that they think would go well with our customers, that our customers would like. And so majority of it is bought at those various shows. And then also we design many of our own exclusive ornaments. So we come up with, you know, the designs here, and then they're produced for us in Europe.
Okay. Now, our family has been coming to Bronner's for decades, and as we pass through, you know, the store is filled with so many family photos and pictures of some famous visitors as well. Who are some of the famous faces that have visited Bronner's over the years?
Oh, wow. There's quite a few through the years. Laura Bush was here several years ago. Also, Marie Osmond, Neil Patrick Harris, Dorothy Hamill, Ernie Harwell, Gordy Howe, Ted Nugent was here several years ago, Governor Engler, Faith Hill, Jim Nabors.
Oh, wow.
Tom Monahan, Marla Maples, Jerry Lininger, who was an astronaut on the International Space Station.
Okay.
Andy Williams, Pat Boone.
Oh, wow.
A whole variety of people through the years.
I guess so. That's great. Well, from carpenters to designers, what work goes into the preparation and maintenance behind the scenes of Bronner's throughout the year?
Oh, there's a lot that goes on. We, you know, all the normal building maintenance for a large building, as you can imagine, with the heating, cooling, lighting, repairs, alarms, all that type of thing. But also, we, you know, have a huge stock room behind the scenes, so we have a lot of staff, you know, keeping everything in order there, and, you know, all the receiving that comes in that all needs to be distributed to the various areas. Also, we have you need to keep the building clean, of course, so we have a wonderful sparkle team is what they're called, and they keep our buildings sparkling. We have quite a talented staff, too, as far as they build a lot of our displays that we use here in the store, the fixtures and many of the other props that go along with the displays, along with a wonderful decorating team that we have to keep everything looking dazzling out there.
And there are new displays that go up every year, right?
Yeah, it's kind of continually changing throughout the year. Naturally, the majority of the display changes happen in the first half of the year when we're not as busy as the second half of the year. And we also, you know, have a big grounds outside of our building. So, you know, upkeeping all the grounds out there and all the lights and displays that are outside. So, yeah, we have a wonderful team, and yeah, they keep busy. We also, many of the fiberglass figures that you see around our grounds and in the store, we have those produced for us. But when they come to us, they are just like a plain white, and our team here paints all those figures.
Well, and if you think it's incredible looking inside, driving around at night outside of Bronner's and really through the town of Frankenmuth is also an experience in and of itself with so many beautiful lights and decorations. Do you have any idea how many lights are just outside of the Bronner's store?
Oh, there's hundreds of thousands. I don't have a number exactly, but yeah, there's tons.
it's quite a sight to see, especially in the evening time as well. Well,
yeah, it is beautiful. And then, as you mentioned, like too, at Christmas time, then from mid-November through the end of the year, the whole town of Frankenmuth is decorated with Christmas lights, and it's just a beautiful place to come and drive through and stroll through. It's really neat.
Now, having been there for many years and being a part of the Bronner family, do you have a favorite ornament or decoration?
Boy, I don't know if I could narrow it down to just one. There's a lot, you know, like through the years that have been special, and, you know, you just kind of add to your assortment each year, just like many families do. There is one real pretty one that I like that is kind of a clear glass ornament, and then there's like a Holy Family painted on one side of the outside of the ball, but then you can like see through to see the nativity from the inside too, and I really like that one.
Well, I know some of Bronner's decor will be on display in downtown Lansing this holiday season. I think there are some new lighted wreaths that will be in the downtown area and some other decorations that are coming right from Frankenmuth. So Lansing area folks will get a chance to see that and check things out. So
that's wonderful.
Bronner's is open year-round. People can visit bronners.com for more information and all the catalog of available items on there as well.
Absolutely. You can shop anytime, you know, at bronners.com.
All right, Carla, thank you so much for joining us today on Cattlecast, and I'll say to you first, Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to you. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Do you want to win a Kindle Fire, movie passes, or other great prizes? Keep listening for the Cattle keyword. Then email it to connect@cattle.org, along with your contact information. A winner will be announced during the next new episode of Cattlecast. New keywords will be given each month, so keep listening to the Cattlecast podcast.
My next guest has been with cattle for 17 years and is currently Downtown Lansing's head librarian. Michelle Brousseau joins us now on Cattlecast. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Mark.
So share with us some of the other positions you've had at cattle before you became the head librarian downtown.
Sure. You know, I started as a sub many moons ago, and I think I was a clerk sub. That's somebody who helps with circulation. Then I became a clerk, a regular clerk, part-time assistant. Those are people who help with computer questions. And then when I finished school and I had my master's degree in library and information science, I did the head librarian at Williamston, South Lansing, and then downtown Lansing.
And what was it about librarianship that drew you to the profession?
You know, I like the variety. I like that every day is a brand new day. You don't do the same thing twice in any day, sometimes in any week. It's always different, and it's fun to change the outcome of somebody's day. If somebody's having a bad day, and you can provide them with some information or give them some help, makes it a better day, and you've changed their day.
Absolutely. Well, and speaking of changes, I know the children's area on the first floor of the Downtown Lansing Library has had some nice changes recently and a couple of new additions. You want to tell us about some of those things?
We did get some new additions down there. There are some pre-literacy play elements. You know, imagination is great for building reading skills. We have an art table downstairs, which helps with the fine motor skills, also related to learning how to read. Kids can sit at the art table and they can make anything that they like and often do. I was working last Saturday and we had some parents come in with kids. They sat at the table and drew me a wonderful picture. We have that. The kids love that. We also have a little building structure that the kids can go in there and play with different. There's things that go in there that they can wash dishes or they can do different things with.
I'd like to climb inside and play in that for a while, but I don't think I'm going to fit in there. But
you're not going to fit in there, Mark. Don't even try it. It is fun, though. And we replaced a Legos table because the kids missed it, and the kids are able to go in there and make wonderful designs with their Legos. So yeah, it's a wonderful area.
And for people who haven't been to the downtown library in a while, there are probably some things that they don't even know exist in the building. Let's talk about some of those things, including some of the meeting rooms that are available free to the public.
Yes, I'm glad you said something about that. Three meeting rooms here that each hold about 35 people, but they're interconnected, so you can open the rooms onto each other and actually have more people. We have a huge auditorium. I think the seating is around 95. It's just a wonderful place to be able to reserve and do special events. We have many, many people that do that. On our second floor, you don't have to reserve in advance. You can come in and check out with your library card, and that's great for people who want to study, or maybe child is getting some tutoring help and you just want a place that's a little bit more quiet than sitting at one of the tables. That's a great place to go in.
And so if people are interested in booking the meeting rooms that you mentioned downstairs or the auditorium, how do they go about doing that?
Call me. Yeah, stop at the desk, email me.
And if people happen to be downstairs in the basement level, there are a couple of other nice surprises maybe for some. One is the local history room and the local history collection, and the other is the Book Burrow, the used bookstore run by Friends of the Library.
I would highly encourage anybody who has not visited either local history or the Book Burrow to get down there and check it out. The local history has tons and tons of resources, and even if you think you're not interested in local history, you will be interested once you walk in the door. It's a beautiful place to be, not only aesthetically, but the people that staff that office know what they're doing. They can tell you your house history, one thing after another, little gems that you didn't even know existed. And I would say the Book Burrow was a lot like that, too. Little
right.
gems that you never knew existed. You can get a great deal on books there. I'll give them a shameless plug with their hours. They're open Thursdays 11 to 2 and 4 to 7, Fridays 11 until 2, and Saturdays 11 until 4.
That sounds great. Back to local history, they've just started digitizing some of the yearbooks from area schools. So that's kind of fun, and you can even access some of that through the CATL website
Right, you can. You just go to local history under the website. They're not all on there yet, but they're on their way.
Absolutely. Well, now here at CATL, we are active, vital members of our communities, supporting local charities and service organizations. How is CATL Downtown Lansing helping the community?
Downtown Lansing branch has a couple of initiatives going on right now. We just started collecting gently used outerwear. People that may need a warm coat for the wintertime can come in and pick one of those up. We're also collecting personal items that we can put our community closet, which is going to be located downstairs. Things like toothpaste, toothbrushes, toilet paper, things of that nature that people may need and not be able to buy. The other thing that we're doing in November is working with the Marines for Toys for Tots. We'll be a collection site doing that, which we do every year. And it's a bunch of fun to watch people come in with a big old smile on their face and dump things in that box. box.
Absolutely. Speaking of the holiday season, the 34th annual Silver Bells in the City is coming up Friday, November 16th, right here in downtown Lansing. What special activities will be offered at the downtown Lansing Library that evening?
We love to have family activities. We are so excited this year because we have superheroes.
Yeah.
We have probably more than 10. I keep losing count because there seems to be so many to me, but Wonder Woman, Batman, Iron Man, cool. All the characters that kids and adults alike love from the movies are coming for Silver Bells, and they're going to highlight our Bat Pod, which is a little stealthy machine that is fashioned after the Batmobile.
Uh-huh.
That's going to be right in our lobby. We can come and take pictures, get their phones out. Cameras, if anybody still has a camera.
Right.
We're also going to have people from Lansing Maker Network, and they're going to do crafts and activities. We're going to have a button making station. The downtown library has a real old-fashioned button maker, and people love it when we take it out and do different events throughout the community. So we're going to make that available. It'll be superhero buttons, of course. Screen printing is a really interesting art. Evidently, it's a lot of fun to watch. And we are having screen printers come, and they are going to do demonstrations so the kids can see how the screen printing is done. And then they're also going to do old poster sheets that the kids can color in and they can take with them.
Okay. So lots of stuff going on
that
night.
Lots of stuff.
And as always, it's all free and open to the public.
It is.
Friday, November 16th. And these activities will be pretty much between 5 and 9 p.m. then?
Yes.
Okay. So before you go, though, we do have to ask you one more question. Can you tell us this month's cattle keyword?
Superhero.
Superhero. All right. Email this month's cattle keyword, superhero, to connect@cattle.org. That's connect@cadl.org for a chance to win a Kindle Fire. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mark.
And for more information about holiday events at Cattle Downtown Lansing or at any branch, visit cadl.org/events.
Aquaman, Captain Marvel, Black Panther. Capital Area District Libraries has all your favorite DC and Marvel superhero comics free to download to any mobile device. Check out our super collection today. Also, fly into the downtown Lansing Library during Silver Bells in the City for our superhero holiday celebration. Meet superheroes including Wonder Woman and Batman. Check out the Bat Pod and much more. Capital Area District Libraries. Everything right here.
In the coming weeks, moviegoers will be treated to several blockbuster films. And here to discuss some of them is Tim Diltz, Marketing Director and Regional Manager for NCG Cinemas. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about NCG Cinemas.
Absolutely. NCG, we're a Michigan movie theater chain. We actually started in 1985 in Owosso, Michigan, and we've grown tremendously over the last 3 to 4 years. We're actually in 8 different states now, over 23 locations, so it's been pretty exciting to see the growth.
Oh, I'm sure. And tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually started right after high school looking for a job, and that's right when Eastwood was developed, so I went in, put in my application, and started as an usher. Went to school, obviously, went to LCC and Northwood University and kind of worked my way up and stuck with it. And here I am now as the marketing director for NCG.
Well, what are some of the ways movie theaters are changing with the times?
Movie theaters have really changed a lot in the last 8 to 10 years. We saw the fad of 3D movies hit the screens,
right,
where everybody was excited to see 3D and paid the extra money to go see it. And it's definitely kind of come and gone. Now we're into where the large format, like our Extreme Screen at our Lansing location,
right,
where it's the biggest screen in the state of Michigan. And then we get into the luxury seating. That's really what everybody's transitioning to, having a big, soft, comfortable chair for people to sit in. We've actually have some chairs going into our Midland location that are luxury recliners that are heated seats.
Wow.
So
you get everything in
absolutely. So we'll be doing that through all of our different circuits now. That's definitely the new transition for the theaters. You know, for a while they said movie theaters are kind of going away and not many people are going to theaters. Our attendance continues to keep going up and up and up. And that's because we're being innovative and being creative and trying to keep our loyal customers happy with offering them new new incentives to be there.
Well, let's talk about some of those luxuries too. I mean, popcorn is kind of the standard Correct. Movie thing, but is there more than that?
There absolutely is. And hopefully by May of 2019, our NCAG Lansing location will actually be serving beer and wine.
Okay.
The details are still being worked out about this, but it will definitely be a draw for the more mature audience, the adult audience, to come back in, you know, get the kids a sitter for the night, come in, kick back and relax, and have a beverage while you're watching your favorite new movie.
Well, let's talk about some of the must-see movies that are coming out. This is a big time of year. Christmas Day, you know, has become a big release day for movies over the years. Let's talk about some of the movies that are coming out in the next couple of months.
Okay. Yeah. We have The Grinch, November 9th. Everybody kind of knows the Jim Carrey version of it, and the green little goblin that ran around. And now Universal Pictures has completely rewritten it, brought in the production studio, Illumination Studios, that does Despicable Me and the Minions. So that'll be exciting to see them collaborate on that story.
Right.
And it'll be that heartwarming, feel-good story, and everybody will be excited during the holidays.
And The Grinch has become a favorite among the holiday times. I mean, going way back to the 60s with the Dr. Seuss book and, you know, How the Grinch Stole Christmas and all that. And like you said, the Jim Carrey film. This new one is animated,
correct. Okay. And I think from the previews that I've seen and the trailers that have been released, it looks absolutely awesome.
Well, that'll be another favorite for many, I'm sure, and
for sure.
Perhaps become another holiday tradition.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the next movie that we have is Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
So Wreck-It Ralph comes out about 6 years ago. He's hitting the big stage again with his partner in crime, Vanellope.
Right.
And the owner of the arcade has decided to install Wi-Fi, which is a whole new concept for Wreck-It Ralph. And so now they're going on a new adventure in the tunnels of the whole Wi-Fi experience. So it's going to be cool to see Ralph and Vanellope on their new adventure through the Wi-Fi experience.
Got it. Sounds good.
Our next release, something I'm excited to talk about, is Mary Poppins.
Yes.
Mary Poppins coming back after decades of being off the screen. She's coming back to help the magical families of the Banks and Michael's children. She's going to be back on the stage doing our favorite songs that we've listened for our whole lives, and we can't wait for that to be, once again, December 18th, back on the big screens.
That'll be good. And, I mean, many people remember and the Julie Andrews original film, and so it'll be great to have Mary Poppins back on the big screen.
Absolutely, right before Christmas.
Right.
So, and then another film, Aquaman.
Yes.
We've been kind of teased with him in previous movies such as Justice League, and everybody knows of Wonder Woman, but now we get to experience Aquaman and who he is.
Okay.
And Jason Momoa, and everybody sees how big and strong he is, so it's going to be exciting to see him on the big screens at NCG and just how, where he came from and what he's going to do for his people.
And this is a continuation of a lot of the superheroes. We've seen many of them already, and there's still more to come down the line, too.
Right? Absolutely. Flash is going to be sometime next year. We've already seen kind of Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman, so now this is kind of the fourth. And with Aquaman, it's going to be great.
Perfect. Okay.
And the last title that I wanted to talk about today is Bumblebee, everybody's favorite Transformer.
Yes.
I know he's one of my favorites, kind of the unspoken hero of the Transformer world. But we get to kind of see where he came from. As a
Has it
refugee.
Been that long already?
Yeah. And basically a young girl finds him in a junkyard. It becomes her car. And then Bumblebee comes back to life after he's been on the run from his past war experiences. So it'll be neat to kind of see his background too.
Tim, how many screens does NCG Eastwood have?
We have 19 at that location.
Okay. So with 19 screens, does that mean that all of these movies, I mean, literally come to Eastwood? And how does that process work? I mean, do they stay for just a week, or does it depend on how the business is? How does that process go?
We get, we're fortunate to have 19 screens at that location, so it does allow us to bring a diverse movie product in, you know, from a kids' movies to action-packed to drama to you name it, we can pretty much play it. And every week we're in negotiations with those film studios to bring the most popular movies so the moviegoers have that at the theater. And it's a constant, you know, we're voicing our concerns. There are some times we try to get some independent titles in, and we have success with those as well. But they usually go to the bigger markets like New York or LA or Chicago. Mm-hmm. But we definitely try to get as much product as we can to put as many people in the seats as possible.
So at any one time, there could be a movie for young kids, there could be one for teens, adults.
Absolutely.
Horror, science fiction, comedy, the whole range of films,
the whole
right?
gamut. Yep, absolutely.
That's very cool. Okay. Well, and what's coming up? I mean, again, you talked about the process for, you know, if a movie does well, you know, I mean, it might stay and stuff like that. But how do you negotiate with the studios themselves? I mean, do they negotiate with you and say, you know, we want to make sure this particular film is available right now? And how does that work?
You know, every week they look at the box office totals for our locations and decide on, you know, what movies performed and what movies didn't. And then obviously if a studio has a new movie releasing, they're going to look at an older title that they have on screen and say, we'd rather have that one leave so you can have space for our new title. So it really depends on the studios. They have a lot of say, and we try to work with them to make sure we offer, like I said, and you said, as much of a diverse range of products, so kids and all the way up to the grandparents can come in and enjoy a movie.
Right.
And we have animation to live action to horror to you name it, we have it.
What percentage of your business is done during the holiday season?
Usually about 20 to 25%. Okay. November, December. Obviously, the last 2 weeks of December, with everybody being off of work and school, it's really busy. But it's also a very exciting time to see all of our families coming in that we see throughout the holidays, bringing in their families from out of towns, and then we get to serve them the movie going experience. So it's awesome time.
And like I say, I know for many people, I mean, even Christmas Day has become a big movie-going time, right?
Absolutely. Christmas Day is one of our busiest days that we have all year. And this year is actually going to fall on a Tuesday. So we'll have reduced ticket prices and reduced concession prices on that day. So it should make it even a little bit more affordable for our families to come out on Christmas Day.
Now, Eastwood Town Center, the NCG at Eastwood Town Center and Cattle are partnering on a cool new contest. Tell us about that.
So at the Eastwood Town Center, we partner with Cattle, and what's that going to be is you actually, every time that you come in, you can enter to win a Kendall Fire or some other cool prizes,
nice,
along with 4 movie tickets to NCG.
Oh, wow.
And you can do that as often as you come into the theater. So if you come in every week, you can submit every time you come in.
Wow, that sounds great. What's the time frame on this? This starts
November 1st through December 31st. So November 1st through the end of the year.
Perfect. Well, that's the reason to go right there.
Absolutely.
Well, Tim, thanks for joining us today. It sounds like great films on the way with NCG and obviously the partnership with Cattle. We're glad to have that and glad to have you here with us.
Yeah, we appreciate you offering us to come out in the partnership and can't wait to see how many people enter to win, and hopefully somebody wins a big prize soon.
All right. That's Tim Diltz, Marketing Director and Regional Manager for NCG Cinemas. For showtimes and ticket information, visit ncgmovies.com. And also don't forget about the holiday contest, which will begin Friday, November 2nd at NCG Eastwood. Enter for a chance to win a Kindle Fire and other cool prizes. Another CattleCast is in the books. I want to thank all my guests. And we want to let you know that all cattle branches will be hosting live reindeer visits in the next couple of weeks. For dates and times, visit cadl.org/reindeer. I'm Mark Bezita. Thanks for joining us for CattleCast.